when I saw that you were playing here at the Sixth and I Synagogue, which is just a gorgeous place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's amazing.
I was just wondering if you were booking tours in special venues for any reason, or was this just particularly a unusually gorgeous place?
The guy who books our shows kind of knows that I like to play in like seated venues, like more ambient spaces. So I think he...
So a club, people standing with their hands in their pockets and a beer in there.
Inevitably, those are the best shows just because you're swimming against the tide a bit. But I do prefer more kind of quieter spaces.
And what is it then about? I mean, if the reward is greater on the standing shows, what is it about the seated shows?
I just say that so people don't feel bad if they see a standing show.
I see. is a space like this where... gorgeous dome. There's a huge Star of David that's above you. Does it mean anything? Does church or synagogue or any of that stuff have a place for you in your life?
Yeah, I mean, definitely has had. I mean, at different points in my life, has been significant to me. Being raised as a kid, I was raised as a Catholic, so especially as a teenager, you kind of swim through a lot of different imagery. You know, you're becoming more aware of the world and what's happened in the world, and you just develop different feelings of empathy for different situations. So it's funny, I wore a Star David my whole teens, and I didn't know why I was wearing it, but I think it's because I was raised in Holland when I was 7 years old. And, you know, we lived in Amsterdam in like 1977, and it was like a... I mean, I was raised in the south of England up until that point in a small village, and not a small village, it was a city, but it was like just like a Sussex, like a chicken village, England kind of place. And then to move from there into the Gerrit van der Veenstraat, which was an area that was a Jewish neighborhood before World War II, and it was completely emptied out during World War II, and the street was named after Gerrit van der Veen. I don't know who it is, but he was like a war hero, like someone who'd fought in the Dutch resistance against. So, I mean, as a kid, my dawning consciousness, there was like a Torah, there was like a blessing on the house, because all the houses had the blessings with the things behind the glass piece in the door,
I think, in the front door.
And stuff. And we used to go and visit Anne Frank's house, and that was before they moved Anne Frank's house. It used to be really accessible in the 70s, and you go as a 7-year-old, it just really captured your imagination, because you could go and basically romp through her things and look at the stuff. And I became obsessed with Anne Frank, and she became like one of my three heroes. I had three heroes for a long time. It was Divine, Jesus, and Anne Frank, and they were like my holy trinity. And I used to have them in like a shrine in my room.
And what is it like, the space with Anne Frank's? You walked in, you feel that claustrophobic...
I think really what you feel as a kid with Anne Frank was her dreams and expansiveness of her inner life. And that was somehow very affirming as a kid, as a creative kid. I think most kids, I mean, especially in the 70s in Europe, it was much closer than it maybe was in America, like that sense for people that had emigrated to America after World War II. They, you know, as a result of World War II, they were obviously very aware of World War II, but for a lot of Americans, didn't really have that sense of the immediacy of World War II. You know, my grandmother, you know, was always talking about how, you know, because she lived in London during World War II, and, you know, London was bombed really heavily, and my father and my mother have, like, my father has, like, you know, strong memories of the house being bombed as a kid and stuff like that. So it was a part of the dawning of my consciousness. Was informed by that panorama of history.
Did you write? How did you express what was inside of you as a kid?
Not to say that that's my only, you know, I don't know why.
The shrine.
What happened with that was that, you know, I just ended up starting to think that, I guess it was my own sense of difference, and then I found out, you know, about what my line of relationship would be to something like the Holocaust, you know, as someone that was, you know, also of a line of people that would be exterminated during the Holocaust. So I developed a really strong affinity for this idea of being Jewish. Huh. Do you know what I mean? It seemed very normal to me. It almost seemed like something... Does that seem strange?
No, I mean, it's just identifying with a group of people.
Well, it was my group, in a way.
Yeah.
It was much more my group than the Catholic group.
Did you take to writing? Did you take, I just wonder how being inward and thinking and attaching yourself to a group of people, I just wonder how you express some of what you might have been feeling.
That stuff?
Yeah. I mean, do you write about it? Do you just keep
I think
inside?
I did a lot of writing about it. I think in Europe especially, that whole experience of World War II was sort of, the imagery of it was also projected into the future as a sort of vision of how bad the future could be, you know, in a lot of arts. I mean, even if you think of things like, whatever. I ramble on about a lump of stuff that doesn't really matter for this.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I probably put my foot in my mouth.
Where do you want me to take your foot out? Is there...
did I put my foot in my mouth?
I didn't think so.
Okay.
I didn't think so at all. So if I headed you down, we can just switch paths. I was watching you when you were singing, and this is an odd thought, and I'll see if my foot goes in my mouth, which is that a lot of people I go and hear perform, I think they could well be thinking about whether they've forgot to let the cat in, or whether they did their taxes when they're performing. You know what I mean? and then there are other performers are so completely engaged, and there's no way they could let go of the moment when they're performing. And I think of you as that. But then again, you were up there doing the sound check, and maybe it was a Shasta Cola commercial or something. That you started to break
sorry,
into,
it was so stupid of me. I don't know what I was thinking.
I mean, it's just but the lighthearted part. It's hard to know what's going on inside of you as you sing. You, as an audience person, you feel it deeply. You wonder whether does your mind ever drift when you are performing these songs to the mundane or the.
Well, you know, the thing that I often would be preoccupied with, and it's usually a sign that I'm not doing very well, is if I'm really struggling with the form, you know, to hold the voice up, or, you know, just, you know, thinking about sound that I'm making, you know, usually means I'm not where I want to be.
So when the time goes by and you've done the songs and you don't even realize you've done them, is that sort of when, you know, it's been right?
Well, when it's right, you really do, I tend to at least feel very present in the song. So I do know I'm doing them, but I'm really just enjoying it. You know, I'm just, you know, you're kind of flying.
Do you ever feel a sense of time changing, time shifting when you perform this?
Well, I used to talk about the way that I would say, I had a perfect moment. And I used to have a little corridor. I'd look back at my life and see a little corridor of doors, and they would each be a perfect moment that I'd had. And 80% of them would have been moments that I'd had on stage where everything just fell into alignment. It was almost like the stars aligned and the universe took a photograph of that moment. And I was just one of many statues in a space that were perfectly situated.
What draws you to performing? I mean, it's so natural for you. It's got perfect moments for you. Do you have a clue of what drew you to it? Because it's not a whim.
It's just participating. You know, it's a nice way to participate in life. You know, participate in an event with a group of people. It's a way of engaging for me.
When someone comes up to you and compliments you, what are the sorts of things that you enjoy hearing from an audience when they, is it you made me cry or you made me happy, or does any of that affect?
I don't take that stuff too personally, because I mean, you think about when you make work, my intention wasn't necessarily to evoke a certain response in another person. My intention, at best, my intention could be to create something open enough that it would be possible for other people to engage in it in their way. Mm-hmm. And I know how much work other people's work has meant to me, and how much I've moved from stage to stage in my life, you know, with, you know, other people's work as a map or, do you know what I mean? It's led me through my life in a way, you know, evolved through different people's work and my relationship to it. I just don't take it that personally in a funny way. I just feel like I know where I end. And I don't take a lot of responsibility for how other people feel about my work. So I want people, in a local kind of way, in a personal way, I want people to like it. You know, I want people to find something useful in it. But, you know, you just think about the kind of relationships you forge with other people's songs. It's so personal.
Absolutely.
No one could step, you couldn't, I could never go to the singers that and say, this was your, you made, did me this, you know. I don't think it's not really fair to blame singers for the songs they sing. Do you know what I mean? Or even to hold them that responsible for it.
Because the individual has their own interpretations. It's so far beyond the intent.
Well, it's like blaming a whale for the song of whales. It's like, well, why a whale is just participating, singing a song he learned from a billion other whales, just informing it a little bit with his own experience, pouring it through the lens of his own little eyes. But he didn't invent it. He could have put a couple of turns on it.
I don't know why I feel differently about it, but obviously that's the way the world goes. But for a human and making art, it's not something that you have to do. It's not something, there's not a formula for it. It's, I don't know how to put it, but it seems more...
Well, what about birds? Like, they sing.
Yeah.
What's the difference? I can't really figure it out. I don't really think there is a big difference.
Maybe because we're the same species, but the emotional content of the lyric, the place where we are when we're hearing it, and the place where we are in our own personal space when we hear it, not just the physical space, all has such a different meaning than when I'm sitting in my backyard hearing a bird, because it could be any robin singing.
But imagine what they think when they hear us singing. They probably think the same thing. You know, it's personal, but yeah. I mean, I do think it's like a human song. I think probably in the old times, you know, it was when people were participating in more traditional, there wasn't so much of a focus on what was individual about a song, and more focus on like the communal voice that was passed from generation to generation,
right,
or from, you know, through, you know, echoing through like generations of community, the same kind of songs, you know. And you might be seen for being particularly good at singing it, but the song has got a longer story than any individual singing it.
Yeah, somehow I just think that someone like yourself, who has such such strength and uniqueness to what you do, just doesn't seem like a chorus of song to me. You really do seem to touch me and touch other people in a different way. I mean, I'm thinking of this as a compliment. I'm not sure.
No, I appreciate it. I just get really touched by singers too.
Yeah.
You know, I get touched by music, period. Right. So for me, I don't feel so separate. You know, I mean, I get really involved with other music. Is just a trigger for me. I just get very engaged.
Do you remember when that trigger first became a trigger for you?
Just something that I saw like a kind of freedom, like people expressing themselves more abundantly than they did in pedestrian life, you know. More expansive self-expression, you know, that like allowed to have a bigger dream. Like you could suspend the rules of how to behave in pedestrian life, you know, where you have to hold yourself in a certain way and speak on only one or two notes, blah, 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 peas and carrots. And you could like sing about how your heart really felt and use a swoopy voice and do something different. It was nice. I think it was just appealing to me as a kid.
How old as a kid do you remember doing that in front of people for the first time? Do you remember?
Well, I mean, I wasn't really singing in front of people. But I do remember dancing in front of people.
Uh-huh.
I was like a 7-year-old, 8-year-old. When I saw the first Kate Bush video for Wuthering Heights,
uh-huh,
she used to do this slow motion cartwheel with stop motion.
Did you try to do the cartwheel?
Yeah, I used to try to do that cartwheel for the kids in the neighborhood.
That's great. Tell me just about the band, then I'll let you go. So, if you could just walk around the room, if I'm looking at the stage on the left, there was an acoustic guitar player, for example.
Yeah, well, playing the acoustic guitar is Rob Moose. He's a young musician from New York, and he plays also the violin and does some singing. He's very talented. And Maxime Mostyn has been playing with me for years. He plays first violin. And Julia Kent also, she's kind of a cello star in New York. And she played cello with me for a long time. And Doug Wieselman is a fantastic jazz musician, plays the sax and the clarinet and electric guitar. And Parker Kindred is the drummer. He's also great. He plays with Joan Rosser also. Joan is a policewoman. And he used to play with Jeff Buckley. And he's a great musician, really soulful. And then on the bass is Jeff Langston, who's a good friend of mine. So that's the group right now. That's the configuration that our touring group. It's pretty much the group I've toured with for the last few years.
And they're all basically sitting with charts. Are those charts something that you put together when you write the music, or how does that do? Someone help you do orchestration?
They make the charts. You know, we. I don't really read music, so I'm not capable of writing the charts. But I do put together arrangements. Sort of, we do it in the rehearsal, and then they jot them down, or else one of them creates a string arrangement. Or in a couple of cases, Nico Muley did arrangements for some of the new songs, and they adapted those arrangements for this configuration of musicians. And so, you know, some, I think they probably just have their newspapers and stuff on there too. You know, they get sick of hearing me ranting and railing.
Thanks for doing this.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Enjoy your evening.
Thank you.
Look forward to it.
Yep. Great.